Views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Tuned in to Black Talk Radio News and Music on this Tuesday night. It is January 2nd, 2018. We have just hit the top of the hour. It's 8 o'clock p.m. And, of course, we got an interesting program for you. We do have a guest. We'll be joined once again. I do believe I remember correctly that we've had this guest on before, joining us from the campaign to bring Momia home. Of course, that's referencing political prisoner Momia Abu-Jamal. We're hoping that there is some light at the end of that tunnel. You got a new district attorney who was not mentored by, let's say, those who were straight up enemies of Momia obtaining his freedom, but they got a new district attorney now. I can't recall his name, but there is some hope that he will release information that has been requested in regards to Momia's case. And so definitely something that people who are involved with that campaign, we want to bring them on, update us with any developments. But tonight we're going to be talking to Sister Sophia Williams. Again, she is from the Campaign to Bring Momia Home, which is an advocate organization for Momia Abu-Jamal. Sister Sophia is a native of Jamaica who hails from the Bronx, New York. Her mental imprisonment began to break while taking a history course at Baruch College, and with that, she found activism soon after in the movement to free Momia. She describes herself as a radical activist, and as I mentioned, she has been a part of the campaign to bring Momia home for 4 years. Outside of her activist work, she's an aspiring singer. So we'll be talking to her in just a minute or two. The campaign to bring Momia home is helping to sponsor a January 9th event. So that's just 7 days away, about a week away. It's called Inside the Activist Studio, a Dialogue on White Supremacy. It will start at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. If you're in the New York area, NYC area, it will be held, again, at 6 o'clock p.m. on January the 9th at Recital Hall on the first floor of the Graduate Center, located at 365 Fifth Avenue. Again, that's New York, New York. The world premiere of Inside the Activist Studio interview with Ramona Africa, who we know is the sole survivor of the bombing of the Move family home in Philadelphia. It was a pleasure hearing her speak and meeting her at the Millions for Prisoners Human Rights March and Rally, which occurred during the month of Black August on August the 19th in Washington, D.C. There will also be a discussion with Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz regarding the current state of white supremacy as it operates within the United States. They will have Ortiz's latest book, which is titled Loaded, A Disarming History of the Second Amendment. Of course, you can pick up a copy and get it signed, as she will be available for those book signings. So they are asking that you join them for an incredibly important and timely discussion. Now, after I speak with our activist, Sister Sophia, there's no shortage of news to discuss. There's always something in the news, and we invite people to call in and share their news, views, and opinions. And, of course, we're kicking music. We spin three tracks in a row, so if you got any music requests, you can put those in our chat room for those there in the chat room. Now, I'm going to go ahead and let y'all know I don't play no rock. I don't play no heavy metal. I don't play jazz, except for when I'm trying to go to sleep. But, yeah, I'm a hip-hop, R&B type guy. I listen to some pop music from time to time, but very rarely. But we do spin those tracks for you, three in a row, and you could send in those requests on Twitter at Black Talk Radio, or you can post them on our Facebook page for the promo for the show, tonight's show, that is BTR News, and our Facebook page is Black Talk Radio Network. So I'll be on for the next 2 hours bringing you social, political news, commentary, and music, and we hope that you will be able to take something away from the program at its conclusion. And by all means, we certainly welcome any commentary, questions, and what have you from our audience. So let me check the board and see if we have Sister Sophia on the line. Sister Sophia, do we have you on the line? Sister Sophia, I see someone from the NYC area who is unmuted, but I don't hear anything. So if that's you, sister, I can't see the phone number.
Hey, Scott, it's Thomas from New York. I had a question for you.
Yeah, what's your question, Thomas? Greetings to you and Happy New Year's, by the way.
Happy New Year's to you, brother. I wish you very well this year. I just want to know, have you been able to get in contact with Gus from the Cal show, sir?
No. I've been talking to people on Twitter about it, also on Facebook, and I put out a message yesterday that I had called him via Skype because I don't have his number, but I called him via Skype. I sent him an email. I also hit up Dr. Rayasan, I believe that's how you pronounce his name, as it was suggested that me that Gus talks to him a lot, and I emailed him, and so I haven't heard from anybody on that. So for those that don't know that you don't hear the Cows on this particular radio station because they operate their own radio station as they lease services from the Black Talk Media Project, and you can catch that program on blacktalkradionetwork.com. And Gus, the host, who was the very first host to join us from Blog Talk Radio when we established this safe digital space, has been missing. I want to say it's been over a week since he's last been heard from. And I do believe we have our guest, but give me just a second. Sister Sophia, if that was you who joined us. By the way, Sister Sophia, just hit ** to unmute yourself so I can see your number on the board. But it's been over a week, and it's challenging trying to find out information on a person and you don't know their real name. Because their services are paid for by a donor. And so I know her name, and I reached out to her, and I haven't heard from her either. So I don't know what's going on, but I just ask that people just keep him in their prayers for those that believe in praying or whatever spiritual beliefs you hold. You know, that it's just hard trying to find someone when you don't know their real name. I mean, if I knew his real name, I would hate to call the Seattle police, but I would after all this time to do a wellness check. I hope that he's not in the hospital, but it just doesn't seem like Gus, you know, unless he's in a coma or something and can't let people know how he's doing for him to be missing, you know, and not communicating with anyone. So I'm sorry, I don't have any answers. Was there anything else? Thomas?
No, that was all, Scotty. Thank you, bro.
All right. You're welcome. Let me see if we have our guest on the line. If not, I'll go ahead and give her a call. Sister Sophia, if you're on the line, hit ** to unmute yourself. **. We're scheduled to have you at the top of the hour. Is that you, Sister Sophia?
Yes.
Happy New Year's to you, and thank you for joining us tonight here on BTR News.
Thank you. Thank you, Brother Scotty. Happy New Year's as well, and to your team.
Thank you. Before we get into the event, I would like to just take an opportunity, if there's anything to share, as I know there may not be any updates since you were last on the show, but is there anything new in terms of either Mamiya personally, what's going on with him? You know, is he still in recovery from that Hep C and the treatments? I know you spoke about it the last time, so I hope that he's still on a positive path of healing from that. And anything concerning his case and his freedom that you have heard?
Yes. So, again, thank you, Brother Scotty, for having me on your show. And to your question, I do have two updates around Mumia's latest health situation and his legal case. So quickly, I'll just start with the health, as we've had some recent updates in the past week or so around that. So as many may know at this current moment, Mumia was treated for his hepatitis C in infection and has been cured since sometime later last year. But however, for some time now, even during his time of being cured, he's been itching, as bad as how he was in the earlier days of when he had the Hep C. And the issue now is that the outbreak is on again for the itching. His skin seems to be rupturing and is now bleeding due to the severe itching he's under. And it's really so bad that we're definitely in need of him seeing a dermatologist or some kind of specialized skin specialist. So that's the big update we have around his health situation.
And is there... Well, I'm sure that y'all will let us know. I know Tag could get me the information, but if y'all need the public to make phone calls, send emails, whatever it takes, because we knew what it took the last time just to get him the Hep C treatment. So, and this is just, you know, not anything that's unique to him, but I was just reading we had someone die in the jail in North Carolina for lack of medical care. And so that's always a challenge. So anything that the Black Talk Radio audience can do to assist in that campaign for him to see a skin specialist, please let us know. Nothing on the front of his new trial?
Well, before I get to the trial piece,
okay,
there is a set of demands that we're asking people to call for. So there is an action plan in place around this new healthcare crisis that he's facing. And I'm sure Tag could send this to you, but just really quickly, we're asking people to call three specific numbers, and that's the superintendent of the prison, the Secretary of Corrections, and also the Department of Health Acting Secretary. So those are three specific folks we're asking people to call. I also have the numbers here, but I'm not sure if now is the best time to give out all those details or have someone from our end send this document to you for your
I mean, if you audiences. If you have the telephone numbers handy, by all means, go ahead and give out that information.
I do, yeah.
Yes, please.
Okay, so we're asking people to demand that Mumia be taken to an independent medical facility, and I'm just reading this straight out, such as Geisinger Hospital, as in 2015, which has the expertise to provide thorough hands-on diagnostic evaluation and offer supervised patient care. And those three people that we're asking people to call and demand, that specific demand, is the SCI Mahanoy Superintendent Teresa Del Blasio, and her number is 570-773-2158, The other person on the list, again, is the Secretary of Corrections at the Department of Corrections Secretary. His name is John E. Wetzel. The number for him is 717-728-4109. And lastly, the Pennsylvania Department of Health Acting Secretary. That's Dr. Rachel Levine. 717-787-9857.
All right. Thank you. And make sure Tag gets that information to me. So he'll probably post it himself in our group in BTR community, where we have a group for focusing on political prisoners. But thank you for sharing us that health information and who to contact. Now, in terms of his case, is there an update on that?
Yes, really briefly. So, the judge that has recently been involved in the files around Mumia's case, the files that the district attorney holds, that judge has recently ordered has recently ordered the DA's office to present to him new testimony regarding the Ronald Castile, and that it will take place on January 17th. So that's another hearing that's taking place in Philadelphia on Wednesday, January 17th, from 8 till 11 a.m.
Now, if you could briefly give us some background on that, it's sad, and you would think, as internationally known as Mumia Abu-Jamal is, I bet you could go to a bus station and ask people, do they know who he is? That you'll find people they don't know who he is. So there are probably people tuned in right now who don't know what Mr. Castile's role is in this and what exactly the judge is talking about. So if you could just briefly provide us some background on that.
Yes. So essentially, for about almost a year now, we've been in this new fight regarding these files that the district attorney's office holds on Mumia's case. And essentially, what we've been asking for is that these files be released to show that Ronald Castile was the district attorney at the time in Mumia's sentencing. So the issue has been that Castile has been a Philadelphia district attorney for a few years, and later he then became Supreme Court judge.
Mm-hmm.
And he presided over Mumia's case as district attorney in the sentencing phase. And then, as judge, he also, again, presided over Mumia's appeals part of his case.
When it would have been more appropriate for him to recuse himself, right?
Exactly. Right. Exactly. Because it now shows bias in the ruling that he gave, which it was. So he refused to, as you said, recuse himself when Mumia's case came before him, despite knowing that he was DA and also ruled over Mumia's case. And the U.S. Supreme Court actually ruled that doing as unconstitutional. And how that came to be, just so people know, how that came to be was that there was a ruling in Pennsylvania as well regarding another prisoner with the same similar situation with Castile, and that prisoner won his case, which then set precedent for cases like Mumia's and many others.
In this new hearing, that's the next step in the process?
That's the next step in the process that can open up more or newer legal grounds for Mumia.
Well,
in the past, mm-hmm. back in April, and not long after that, the DA has gone into court, and essentially they say that these files don't exist and that Ronald Castillo has had no part in Mumia's mm-hmm. case. And it's been a back and forth battle with the district attorney's office to get them to release these files to show that Castile had everything to do with Mumia's case.
So that's what the files will show. They will document that Castile did in fact have something to do with his case, because his name will be on documents as the presiding judge. Right. Judge, Memo. Correct?
Yeah.
So that's what the action is seeking, is to get the DA's office of Philadelphia to release those records that have been requested. Now, you mentioned that the DA's office had been not cooperating and not acting in a manner to produce justice, but acting in an unjust manner, as they have always done from day one, mm-hmm. concerning Mumia and not just him. But so there has recently been an election. I think we talked about it the last time mm-hmm. you were on. Now, have you all, now know, again, there was some hope out there that this new DA was progressive and was going to practice justice. So has he done anything in this case new, or will we find out where he really stands at this new hearing?
Yeah, we have not seen or heard anything from him since. And as you said, I think that's part of what we will be waiting for, to see what happens on that day in this case. But even beyond that, any kind mm-hmm. of interactions we plan on for him, whether it's meeting with him or some kind of letter writing or some sorts, we will see truly where he stands and what's his plan moving forward now that he is fully situated in the job. And he has made a number of promises to right the wrongs of the incessantly corrupt system of justice system in Pennsylvania. So I would say it's a matter of time, but there's much more on our part to be done to make sure the pressure is put on him, not just for Mumia, but for the many other everyday Philadelphian citizens that are being caught up in this rotten system.
And I'm sorry if you mentioned it and I just simply forgot, but is there a date for this hearing, and where can people get information?
Yes, there is a date. Again, that date is Wednesday, January 17th, from 8 to 11 a.m., and that will be taking place at the Philadelphia Criminal Justice Center. And for more information, people can check out, check our website out, bringmumiahome.com. They can also email us, most importantly, email us at bringmumiahome@gmail.com.
Well, thank you for those updates. Now, let's talk about the Activist Studio, A Dialogue on White Supremacy. If you could just clear something up with me, I'm not sure, is this going to be like two speakers, or is Sister Ramona Africa going to be interviewed, or she'll be giving a presentation? I know there's going to be a discussion with the author and Native American Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz, and of course the book signing and selling of her book Loaded, A Disarming History of the Second Amendment. But what exactly are people looking to encounter on January the 9th at Recital Hall?
Yeah, so basically we are having a dialogue between Ramona Africa and Professor Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz around white supremacy. And they will both be in conversation with each other in an interview of sorts. And part of what we're trying to do here is to really hone in on this moment that we're in and to heighten not only our own understanding around this moment, but for others who are seeing this on TV with the Charlottesville incidents and everything else around that, and Trump and all these new moments that really display display the ugly head of white supremacy, but for them also to understand the roots of where this is coming from. And so with Ortiz's book, Loaded, and Ramona's experience and understanding of white supremacy and what she has been through within the neighborhood of Philadelphia and her family's home being bombed by the government, they will be in that kind of a discussion next Tuesday in New York City. And a little bit beyond that, we will have clips from the interview, Ramona's story, that we did for the second installment of our project Inside the Activist Studio. We'll have clips from that interview as well being showed.
So it'll be a dialogue between the two, and it makes me wish I could be there because I don't want to say like I'm pro Second Amendment, you know, because I do understand the history of the Second Amendment, but let me just put it this way. I'm pro armed self-defense. It's part of my family culture. It has also been a very big part of revolutionary resistance to slavery in this country, to white supremacy in this country. And we have a lot of revolutionary organizations that believe in practicing armed self-defense, including the MOVE family. Now, I haven't ever had a conversation with Sister Ramona Africa on where she stands on armed self-defense today. I know people can change over the years, and it's been decades since that traumatic event happened to her, and then she still has family members that are in prison. But the MOVE family did practice armed self-defense, and so that will be interesting to see, you know, because now I haven't read the book. Have you read the book, Loaded, A Disarming History of the Second Amendment?
I'm sorry, could you repeat?
I haven't had an opportunity to read the book, Loaded, A Disarming History of the Second Amendment by Professor Ortiz. Have you had an opportunity to read it or preview it or anything like that?
Yes, quite briefly.
Okay. Now, from what I was able to gather from the Amazon, entry was that she's documenting the connection and in the literature, you know, she does mention slavery, but let me find this one passage where she says, in Loaded, Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz peels away the myths of gun culture to expose the true historical origins of the Second Amendment, revealing the racial undercurrents connecting the earliest Anglo settlers with contemporary gun proliferation, modern day policing, and the consolidation of influence of armed white nationalists. From the enslavement of blacks and the conquest of Native America to the arsenal of institutions that constitute the gun lobby, Loaded presents a people's history of the Second Amendment as seen through the lens of those who have been most targeted by guns, people of color. Now, again, I haven't read the book, let's just do straight talk here, okay? It sounds to me like, you know, what we hear a lot coming out of liberal groups where they are anti-Second Amendment. They think that gun ownership should be severely restricted, and some of them would go as far as to say that, None of the citizens should have any weapons whatsoever. Do you have a position on that? And do you know what side of the issue, you know, Professor Ortiz takes through this book on the Second Amendment? I mean, I know the history is important because we want to study history, not to find out how great we were, but as Mr. Neely Fuller Jr. said, to find out where we messed the hell up. So, I mean, so let me just stop right there and give you a chance to respond.
This is a loaded question. So just speaking personally for myself as someone who's been in activism for a small period of time, but over time have developed quite a number of understandings and been able to formulate that more clearly, even though many other parts of it is still being baked within my understanding and interactions within social justice movements. I definitely know that or understand that there's a huge difference when it comes on to people of color being, for instance, being gun owners, and that compared to those who are white being gun owners. And I definitely, I don't think I've always formulated where I stand on this, but I know that there is something deeply, deeply wrong in how it's looked at in terms of white people being able to do this and use, essentially being privileged and entitled and use it to kill and murder and get away with that. And it being so much more different, it's seen as self-defense for them, but for us having to do that or thinking of doing that, it would be seen as, it will essentially be criminalized. So I definitely am on the side of where are our rights? Where do we stand when we have to protect ourselves? Why shouldn't we be entitled to, why shouldn't we be entitled to the same kinds of rights? But then again, that goes back to how are we perceived throughout society from the days of slavery and beyond, and that kind of demonizing. So that's kind of where I'm going with this. And I know I have other thoughts, but nothing is clearly baked for me to come out with something strong right now as we're live on the radio. But just something that just came to me as you asked the question. And from what I know, from the little that I know, that Dunbar Ortiz is not liberal anti-gun. And what she is able or has been able to do throughout her book, and I'm sure throughout her experience, is exposing white savagery as the real roots of U.S. mass murder, et cetera. I think that's where I can leave it for right now.
Thank you for sharing your thoughts on that subject, because I think, you know, we do need to have these conversations and what have you. Actually, I'm working Thursday to get one of the representatives from the Huey P. Newton Gun Club down there in Houston, Texas, where one of their founders has been arrested on gun charges. And so that kind of speaks to, you know, that privilege of how people who are classified as white in this system, you know, gun ownership is promoted to them. They seem to be able to get guns quite easily. But then when you are not the primary victims of prison slavery, which one of the things that it seeks to do is to strip black people, non-white people, of any constitutional rights as for citizens of this corporation called USA Inc. And so, you know, they take away their right to vote. So that's why I say voting matters, or they wouldn't take it away. And I also think gun ownership matters, or else they wouldn't be stripping black people of their rights to bear arms. But, you know, part of that history, I identified a couple of years ago as I was studying what came first, slavery or white supremacy. And I'm about to share the Virginia Slave Codes of 1705, which led me to the conclusion, along with Bacon's Rebellion, that white supremacy was a tool that was implemented in order to further slavery. And that I call the Virginia Slave Codes of 1705 the introduction of white supremacy on this continent by law, by a code, a set of codes enforceable by law by those with guns, because it was the first document that I'm aware of in my research. It could be something further than, I think it is one in 1600, but I just pulled this one up. But it says Virginia Slave Codes of 1705. Let me just share some quick bullet points. These codes effectively embedded the ideal of white supremacy into law by the following racist devices: established new property rights for slavers, allowed for the legal free trade of victims of slavery with protections granted by the courts, established separate courts of trial, prohibited blacks, regardless of their free status, from owning arms. Whites could not be employed by blacks, and it allowed for the apprehension of suspected runaways. So this even preceded the Fugitive Slave Act, which came in the 1800s. You know what I'm saying? So this thing right here, this Virginia Slave Codes of 1705, I'm pretty sure the professor probably has this in her book and has made reference to it. And if she's found anything earlier than that, I wish I was able to attend and ask these questions, but perhaps afterwards we can have her on for an interview and carry on this conversation. So, I mean, what are your thoughts on what I just said in terms of, you know, white supremacy being used as a tool to further slavery? And I don't know if you know or not. I suspect you know, being that you know Tag, but we're abolitionists. We're modern day abolitionists because we say the 13th Amendment did not abolish it. Well, let me restate that. Scotty didn't say it. The people who passed the 13th Amendment said that slavery was not abolished and that it is still in place as punishment for a crime. But, you know, just seeing these modern day slave codes and what have you, and seeing the slave codes of 1705 playing itself out through the courts and through society here in the 21st century is very, very interesting. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I am in agreement that, you know, white supremacy has essentially pushed that much further. It seems like ever so often we have different variations of the new kind of slavery, and ever so often it changes in its title, but it comes down to just being that. And as you said, and I was actually having a conversation with this, about the 13th Amendment and what specifically states with Tag a few nights ago. And it was our duty to come back to revisit this topic amongst between him and I and possibly others around this, just because, we're seeing these kinds of atrocities being done onto people of color. And then we're seeing that the answer for them by the system's demands is imprisonment. And so I feel like more people are understanding that they're more understanding that there's a problem in our society, and that it seems, as always, the response is to lock them up. And that has recently allowed me to revisit the understanding and the larger picture of abolition, and what would that mean for our society, and what would that look like. And essentially that was the trend of my conversation with TAG, not only for more of my understanding and for me to take a real strong stance, but also for me to have this conversation with others who are not political like myself, but they are definitely understanding that something is wrong and this is not fair, and what do we do? And is the response for us to just get rid of prisons or not? So yeah, I hear what you're saying, and I agree, and I know, personally speaking, and I'm really not afraid to say this, there's much more reading and political education that I need, not only from the Mumia group that I work with, but even outside of that, to strengthen my political sharpness in conversations like these.
Thank you, Sophia. Are you up for a phone call? I don't want to keep you too long, as you know, I know that you're a busy person and whatnot, but we do have a phone call. Maybe they have a question for you or I. But let's take this call, area code 502. Thank you for calling in to BTR News. You're on with Sister Sophia, an activist in the campaign to bring Mumia home, and of course, yours truly, Scotty Reed. What's your name, and go ahead with your question or comment.
Yes, greetings.
Greetings.
I've been going by Mhandisi. So I was just going to comment and then, you know, just ask your opinion. So when you had mentioned that perhaps white supremacy began during slavery, or you know, around that time, I tend to go more with Dr. Welsing's approach that white supremacy began when the white people or albinos, when they came into contact with people with melanin, period, because if you mix them, then there's no more albinos, and they realize that, and just the science of that is, you know, once you understand that they're albino, I think it's kind of easier to see why they would be why white supremacy would be just them coming in contact with anybody. And I just wonder what your opinion on that is. And also, the last thing I would say is just concerning Mr. Gus. That's concerning me. I'm hoping that, you know, hoping the best that he's alive. And also it's concerning me with the other black speakers. A lot of them have either quote unquote retired or doing something that could be, you know, considered like a political suicide type thing. And that leaves the rest of the population vulnerable during this time of war. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Let me go ahead and answer that question for you. No, I don't believe in Dr. Kress's theory of albinism being the origin of white people. I tend to take the more, it's not me taking a scientific view, but I tend to agree with the scientific literature that says that Africans, melanated people, immigrated out of Africa, came in contact with Neanderthals, who are not albinos, but are another subspecies of humans, and some mating went on, and that is why today you will find that the quote-unquote Caucasian populations and the Asian populations have the highest percentage of Neanderthal DNA in their system. In terms of albinism, you know, you have how do I say that? You have people with albinism in Africa that produce black children, fully melanated children. So, yes, I was aware of that theory of albinism, but I would have to say the evidence does not support that theory. Now, when I'm talking about white supremacy, when I hear Mr. Neely Fuller say a system, I'm not talking about, I don't look at that as people's personal beliefs and how they treat human beings. They come on the street, come across in the street. I look at a system, I'm talking about, I'm thinking of a system of government that has laws that it passed, and it has law enforcers that make sure that that law is enforced throughout society. So I'm talking about a system, and I tend to stick on this continent, the history of this continent. And on the history of this continent, we know non-white people were here first. There's even some evidence presented by historians that Africans even came here before Columbus. They came before Columbus, okay, and traded with Native Americans here. And I also know that prior to Bacon's Rebellion, which this is mentioned in this material I was reading from, the Virginia Slave Codes of 1705 came 29, almost 30 years after Bacon's Rebellion. What was Bacon's Rebellion? Bacon's Rebellion is where you had people were known for where they came from and not by skin color. You were Irish, you were Scottish, you were British, you were whatever part of Africa you came from. You have a Moroccan presence here as well on this continent. So it was after Bacon's Rebellion, which was poor people of different skin colors, because racial classification had not been introduced yet as law. And they came together, and let's just use today's terminology to make it simpler to understand. It was the 99% versus the 1%, okay? Because most of the people here, even if they were free, they were poor. They were colonists. They didn't come from a wealthy class. You had free black colonists. You had, of course, your Irish, your Scot-Irish, your Scottish, other people. And even in the area I live in, they say 400 African-descended people were sent from this area of North Carolina to fight in the Revolution. But most of this history, of course, is hidden from us because they want us to think that white people created everything in this nation, and they built it all, and they fought for it all, and they won everything, and that's simply not true. So that's why I bring up, like, the Virginia Slave Codes of 1705, which came 30 years after Bacon's Rebellion. Bacon's Rebellion was where the 1% cut a deal with the Irish to say, okay, we ain't gonna enslave y'all no more. What we gonna do is we gonna make y'all the plantation overseers. And so that was to start a class division along racial line. Or let me put it this way. That was a way for them to counter the classism resistance by introducing racism. And then it was codified in law in the Virginia Slave Codes of 1705. But let me just read right quick, and I'll get Sophia's final comments. We don't want to hold her up. But these new laws, they're talking about the Virginia Slave Codes of 1705, 30 years after Bacon's Rebellion. These new laws exhibited a grand departure from business as it once was, stripping from blacks many previously held rights. Before this, indentured servants, while they served their term, and slaves were almost equal in their plight, now a racial divide was a legal mandate. Historians generally agree that this law was devised to establish a greater level of control over the surging African enslaved population of Virginia. It also served to socially segregate white colonists from enslaved blacks and free blacks, making them disparate groups, hindering their ability to unite. So hope that answers your question in terms of what I know, in terms of what I study. Let me see, Sister Sophia, I don't want to hold you up. Did you have any final comments for us, or if you wanted to add anything to his question, or anything how I responded, please go ahead.
I actually agree with you, and you gave me some deeper insights into some missing pieces of the puzzles for me. So I appreciate his question and your response to it, as well as it further pushed my understanding and development. What I did want to add is that we are live streaming the event next week, Tuesday.
Oh, that'll be great.
So, yes, we're live streaming, so you can check that out, as well as others out of town who would like to see it. We are probably live streaming it from our Facebook page, but that's not set in stone yet. So as soon as that is, Tag will have that information for you in time for your listening audiences and for many others who would like to see this.
Oh, man, that's so great, you know, and that we have this technology and we can reach outside of, you know, our physical limitations and you know, connect with people and share information with people all around the globe, because the internet's indeed global. So, Tag, if you're listening, make sure you get that information to me as soon as they nail down the details, because I definitely will tune in to watch that. Sister Sophia, again, thank you for the great work that you do through the campaign to bring Momia home. We're definitely going to keep following up with him, and I personally am going to try to bring on more guests to talk about our political prisoners in addition to the prisoners of politics, because there is a difference. But did you have any final thoughts, and please share those event details one more time?
Yes. So again, event details for next Tuesday's event, again, it's called A Dialogue on White Supremacy with Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz and Ramona Africa. And that will be taking place next week, Tuesday, starting 6 p.m. At the Graduate Center in the Recital Hall in New York City. And our other event, which really is a court appearance, a court date of Mumia's, that again will take place Wednesday, January 17th, and that will be in Philadelphia, specifically at the Philadelphia Criminal Justice Center. And again, I'll have Tag send these information to you. And once again, Brother Scotty Reed, I want to thank you for always being open and able to have me on your show, and for us to have these kinds of discussions that go beyond just what I'm here to talk about. So thank you for your insight and for your time.
You're very welcome, and the door is always open to you and your organization. And Sister Sophia, you stay safe behind these enemy lines of USA Inc., and we definitely are going to keep our family in New York in our prayers. You have a great evening, sister.
Likewise, brother. Good night. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Right, that was Sister Sophia Williams with the campaign to bring Momia home. Again, Momia is one of the more well-known political prisoners, victims of J. Edgar Hoover's COINTELPRO. And as I've always stated, COINTELPRO ain't over. They just name it something else. But, you know, I was thinking about COINTELPRO the other night, and going back to last night's program, as I've been studying these well-known figures throughout Black history here in the United States, and how they were able, just the activities of the FBI, and they were very violent with those leaders who had an appeal outside of the Black community. Malcolm X, after he came out from under Elijah Muhammad, and in his own words, came into his own mind and started formulating his own personal beliefs and politics and what he thought and what he believed based off of new evidence and his pilgrimage to Mecca. And he was starting to have a wider appeal than just the black community. When I look at a Fred Hampton, Chairman Fred Hampton of Chicago, not only was he influential with quote unquote gangbangers of the time in Chicago, but he was also influential with them little suburbanite white kids. Martin Luther King Jr., we know from Jump that he had influence outside of the white community, outside of the black community. And then when he started taking a global worldview and said that the United States is the greatest purveyor of violence on the face of the planet, all those individuals met a violent end. And, you know, we're just talking about the Second Amendment with Sister Sophia. We're taken out by way of the gun. And so I just think there's something to that. I think there's something to who survives and who doesn't. When we're talking about that heightened period of terrorism, and I say, you know, when I say heightened period, I mean up to that point. But it's just interesting how they just really, really wanted to destroy the Black Panther Party, again, practicing armed self-defense. We know that Malcolm X was a big supporter of armed self-defense. And Martin Luther King Jr., his very last march was with a group called the Deacons for Defense, who practiced what? Armed self-defense. So he was moving towards, well, he always kept guns because he was from the South anyway. And it was a strategic tactic for not to have little children and old people out there with guns and stuff. You know, that was all strategic, but he wasn't the pacifist that a lot of people try to make him out to be. And that was evident that he agreed to allow the Deacons for Defense to provide security for the March on Fear. That was his very last march before he was assassinated by the U.S. government. I just think there's something to that. Now, I do want to take a music break. We played three tracks in a row. And when I come back on the other side, I like to continue the conversation on gun ownership. As I mentioned, we have one of the founders of the UEP Newton Gun Club down there in Houston, Texas, was arrested about a week and a half ago by the ATF and the FBI. We know that they will be considered by the FBI black identity extremists. You can't be identifying with an extremist like Huey P. Newton, a founder of the Black Panther Party and following their motto of armed self-defense. We can't have that. So again, COINTELPRO never went away. So I'm trying to get more information on that, on the specific nature of the charges. Again, just cause they charge a person with something don't mean that they're guilty. They charged Black Panther Party members, a whole bunch of people, a whole bunch of different charges. And we see these political prisoners in prison today, 30, 40 years, and ain't hardly nobody talking about them except for the dedicated members of the political prisoner advocacy community. So we can continue that conversation. Where do y'all stand on armed self-defense? You know, after Trayvon Martin got murdered by George Zimmerman, we had some black people, some, because we should never say black people, because that implies all black people, and we are not a monolithic thinking people. But we had some black people influenced heavily by liberal Democrats who were all on that let's repeal Stand Your Ground. And you know, there was a whole campaign. His Trayvon Martin's mama became like the face of that, you know. And so I think that's being reactionary when we're so quick to jump behind movements to disarm people, okay? And that just doesn't, as I said last night, that don't make any logical sense with the level of terrorism that we face. And who you going to call to protect you when the people that you would call to protect you is the very ones that's terrorizing you and throwing you into slavery? Who you going to call? Okay? Who you going to call? Ghostbusters isn't a real thing. All right? So who you going to call? You call on Smith and Wesson. That's who you call on. Or you call on Taurus. As the old saying goes, I'd rather die with a gun standing up trying to defend myself and my family than to, you know, be put on my knees and executed, shot in the back of the head. So, I mean, we could talk about that. My strongest influence, though, is my own family. As I wouldn't be sitting where I'm sitting today if my grandfather and my uncles did not practice self-defense, as we saw many black families get run off their property, including here in North Carolina, which always had strong free black communities that were self-sufficient, but terrorists ran off many of these families. And I wonder, is it because they just weren't sufficiently prepared or willing to pick up that gun? Whatever y'all want to talk about, the phone lines are open. You can share your news, your views, ask me any questions. Again, agreement isn't necessary, because what's the point of having a dialogue if we all agree on everything? If we agree on everything, there's no reason to ask questions. There's no reason to hash it out and try to come to the proper conclusion or agree to disagree and leave it at that. So before I go to the music track, L.A., did you have something you want to add? We're at the top of the hour, and we'll play three in a row. So I'm going to go ahead and get your call first. But what's on your mind, L.A.? What are your thoughts tonight?
Well, it's always a good time to hear you, Scotty. How you doing, brother? Are you recovering from the sickness well?
Yes, I seem to be getting stronger every day. Have a good appetite. And, you know, it's important that we eat when we're feeling a little down because, you know, people get sick and they stop eating. That ain't helping. You know what I'm saying? So I got a strong appetite. I got a strong appetite, bro, and just a little congestion, but it's clearing up.
Well, that's good to hear, man. And you know I've been throwing you some, you know, just throwing it out there, man. That whatever they doing up in that sky, man, it's, I mean, there's people here in our town that, you know, they're saying flu, but it's like, it doesn't seem like flu more than something else, you know. It ain't no telling. But, hey, I'm going to move on to what I was going to say. Young Brother Tag, I notice he keeps asking that question and he uses that title. I think he deserves an answer of another kind. So if you don't mind, it's not to challenge anybody else's information. I feel like this, whatever you know, whatever I know, if we put it together, we should come up with something.
I'm in the dark about the question that Tag asked.
Or what y'all was referring to about the white people and the albino stuff.
Oh, okay. Well, Tag asked the question. Okay. I didn't see it. I missed it.
I'm sorry. Maybe I didn't catch it because I came in on it. He was sounding like
that wasn't Tag. That wasn't Tag. That wasn't Tag. That was somebody else. Now I know. Now I'm less confused.
I'm sorry. My bad. Yeah, because I know his voice. I'm sorry. I forgot. That ain't Tag. Okay. Anyway, let me get to my point. Here's what I think, Scotty. It's really hurting black people not to know science. Reason why I say that, if you turn to science, whether it's metaphysical or synthetic science, you're going to find that in these things that the reality is. Now, this is me theorizing. This is my theory. This is not something somebody told me. I use my own logic and I come up with something. I believe if you take the story of what Farrakhan and them say about Yaqub, the crazy scientist, if you take the story or the explanation Dr. Welsing puts out there, we have to agree this is science they're talking. I don't think they're trying to put it out there like, oh, yeah, just out of nowhere, white people came out and about. And here's something else I keep having. A question keeps coming up in my head when I hear people say we slept with Neanderthals. Now, let me say it this way. From the looks, physically, what they said a Neanderthal looked like, I would say shame on black folks for ever stooping that low to get in bed with something that looked like that. So that challenges everything about us that we say we think about ourselves. So I'm going to leave it right there for you to think about this one. This is why I'm saying it. We can all accept today that we can clone babies, clone animals, grow meat in a lab, but we cannot accept the fact that somebody could have went in a lab and created another people that has become your direct, immediate karma because you used the science the wrong way. That's going on right now if people are not paying attention. That's what's going on with these skies. That's going on, I mean, the stuff they're putting up in the sky. Everybody talks about CERN. I don't have enough information to be talking on that, but from what I gathered, listening to the man who himself found all the code to the Matrix, Sylvester James Gates Jr., as you saw me put on the community post, the stuff that they're talking about, I've learned this stuff in training myself, and I can tell you that I would have to first say that the young man that keeps asking about that, I would have to say that his answer I would give him, consider white folks being an experiment that went bad and we're paying for it. And until we get back to some of that science, I don't think we're going to solve this problem like that, the way we've been going about it, Scotty. The history keeps telling us, and I heard you a couple of times say we should look at what Neely Fuller said. Well, that's one of the things we don't want to look at.
What's
science
that?
We've allowed the science to be perverted by ourselves and given to the people that are using all that stuff on us today. That's my theory. I'm not arguing nobody else's point. That's right. My theory.
Hey, we all entitled to our theories, and we should engage in critical thinking because that's what you're doing when you come up with a theory. That means you're critically thinking about something. All right. So, hey, I ain't got a problem with theories, but I'm going to be honest. You know, I'm going to critically think about it and I'm going to come to my own conclusion, which we each and every one of us should.
But Scotty, ask yourself this question. Would you slate? Okay. This is what I'm trying to say, man. This is how the Bible has hurt a lot of us. Some people truly do have a childlike mentality or image in their head that Eve literally talked to a physical snake.
Okay.
See, that's why I'm saying that. It's not that I'm trying to change anybody's belief system. I'm trying to get them out of the imaginary image they put on top of the snake. The snake ain't nothing but a smooth-talking person, if you ask me.
Okay.
You know, that would be my theory. That's all I'm saying. So I'm saying if we can stop looking at things with cartoonish type of images, we just might get somewhere with understanding who we're dealing with.
Okay. All right, Ramon. Listen, I'm going to put you back on mute, and I'm going to put Ross, I think that's Ross or Thomas, on mute, because I am overdue for my break, and I'm trying to be more professional in my radio broadcasting and what have you. But let me, before I take my station break and play my three tracks in a row, let me say this. Mr. Neely Fuller said, I heard him say this. I actually got the clip. I just ain't got it queued up, and I ain't trying to look for it right now. But he said that we be taking pride in things based on the skin color or based on me being white or based on me being black or based on me being a Frenchman or something like that. And then he said that we be, you know, that none of that means nothing if you don't believe in practicing justice. He said that white people, black people, non-white people, these are the creations of the creator. And that, you know, it ain't nothing wrong with a person being white. That don't make something inherently evil about that person. That's a skin color. This is Mr. Neely Fuller that I find a lot of Fullerites, and I don't mean that disrespectfully. That's just a little nickname I came up with for his ardent followers. And I find that a lot of Fullerites ignore a lot of stuff that Mr. Neely Fuller has to say on that subject. He doesn't say that all white people are white supremacists, but you have to be white to be a white supremacist. And again, you know, I'm speaking to those that follow his logic and what have you. I'm in agreement with some of the things he say. I'm in it, and some of the stuff I don't agree with. Again, we're not here to be agreeing with each other. We're here to critically think and have dialogue. But again, going back to Neanderthals, look, man, We got people that's having sex with horses and dogs, and it ain't all white people either. There's a black dude in South Carolina got busted sleeping with a horse. So I don't find it far-fetched that you would have some males come out of Africa, so-called modern man, come out of Africa, maybe be separated from the females of his clan or something like that, and come across a piece of hairy, you know what, and put his thing up in there. That ain't hard for me to believe. You know, being in the military, man, them dudes go all around the world sticking their little things in everything they can. And then that's what they call, it's a name they got, it's not brats, it's not military brats, it's something else. They got a name for them. I know my father, my biological father, told me I might have a sister over there in Vietnam for when he was over there in Vietnam. He might have left a child over there. So in terms of human beings having sex, I don't think that will preclude them because of how Neanderthal looked, being all hairy with a strong brow line and all that, and looking, you know, like they look, will stop somebody from having sex with them, man. I just don't believe that. But at the end of the day, for me, and I agree with Mr. Fuller on this point, it's about practicing justice, man. You can wave that flag and talk about being Afrocentric all you want to, but if you don't believe in practice justice, don't none of that matter. And I'll try to find that clip and play it after our three tracks in a row. So, again, we have open lines. I will be sharing just some quick news items, though. But yeah, open dialogue, again, agreement isn't necessary. We just got to respect each other, man, because that's how you grow, is when you have dialogue and you critically think and you hear other people's perspectives, and don't dismiss them right out, but seek evidence. And with that, let me just give the definition of a theory. A theory is a contemplative and rational type of abstract or generalizing thinking, or the results of such thinking. Depending on the context, the results might, for example, include generalized explanations of how nature works. The word has its roots in ancient Greek, but in modern use, it has taken on several related meanings. Theories guide the enterprise of finding facts rather than of reaching goals, and are neutral concerning alternatives among values. So when somebody put a theory out there, like we always hear about Einstein's theory of relativity or all of these other theories that he came up with, they're theories, meaning that he, based off of some evidence, has theorized that this is why this certain thing in nature is acting a certain way. But then other scientists either come along and they follow up on the work and they make observations that's either going to confirm that theory or it's going to disprove its theory. So it's very important to know what a theory is. A theory is not a fact, but it is basically speculation and where you're trying to come to a conclusion on why something is the way that it is. And then before it becomes a fact, of course, you got to uncover the facts to prove the theory. All right, so you're listening to Black Talk Radio News, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. This network is managed by the U.S.-based nonprofit Black Talk Media Project. It is peopled power, meaning we don't get government grants. We don't have George Soros types dropping $100 million on us for a budget. This is people-powered radio all the way, all right? And so if you would like to see us continue, but not only just continue, I am not content with continuing what I've been doing for the past few years. That's not growth. I want to see the work of Black Talk Media Project extend into the community, not just being based online, but actually having stations, physical buildings where people can come in and talk about what's going on in their city, in their town, in their community, to discuss the problems and come up with solutions. That's what the founding vision of Black Talk Media Project was about. It wasn't just about one safe digital space called Black Talk Radio where black people who are being persecuted on other platforms can find a home to talk about how whatever they want to talk about within reason. You can't be on here threatening people, threatening to kill people and stuff like that. You know, within common sense, it is pretty much an open platform, but we need to get beyond that. We need to get beyond the national conversations and have the localized conversations, because that's where you really solve the problems, is what people going through day to day, as opposed to what's happening in Washington, D.C., unless you live in Washington, D.C. All right, so that's what's up. The telephone numbers are 866-510-9025. That's 866-510-9025. Or 704-802-5056. Hit star to put yourself in the caller's queue. Please, 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 please watch background noise until we call on you. And then definitely the floor will be yours. Going to kick it off. I hope that this track is still on here with some Father Ja. Shout out to Father Ja, New Orleans area rapper. I haven't heard from him in a long time. I hope you still doing okay, bro. I really appreciate the Guns and Jordans track. Y'all don't know, but yours truly inspired a hip-hop track called Guns and Jordans. Where you gonna hide? Where you gonna run when your enemy buying guns and you're buying Jordans? Uh-oh. Shout out to Father Ja out there, okay? So this is some Father Ja. Trayvon told me about you creepy crackers.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All right, welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. If you had a question or a comment, I was getting some background noise, so that's why I had to mute some folks. But please hit star. Everybody know they welcome, okay? We don't try to shut nobody down or shut nobody out. We welcome all perspectives. But I do believe my brother, my comrade in abolition, Max Parthas, was wanting to jump in here. I don't see Max on the line no longer. I'm not sure if that's him or not. I'm not able to see the entire board. Is that
you? Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, Max. So, Happy New Year's to you and Tribal Rain and the rest of the family, bro.
Thank you, brother. Same to you and the family out there, Otis in L.A. and everybody listening. Happy New Year's to you. I'm here with Tribal Rain today. She's celebrating her birthday, another year around the sun.
Oh, happy birthday. Happy birthday, yes. Tribal. All right. So what's on your mind tonight, Max? We've been talking about, earlier we were talking about Mumia Abu-Jamal's. We talked to Sister Sophia with the Bring Mumia Home campaign, and then we started talking about the Second Amendment and white supremacy, and of course, you know my position on that, that all of these laws, yes, was put in place to continue the evil practice of slavery. To get better control over the intended target. So what's on your mind tonight?
I've been having some issues with the false prophets that we have in our community. These hustlers and shysters who consider themselves thought leaders, but never mention anything about the core issues that we deal with, and then spend all of their political currency on beefs amongst each other, whether it be Ta-Nehisi Coates and Cornel West, or Umar Johnson, and Tariq is his name. But whoever it may be, we seem to keep getting caught up in the drama of these three-ring circuses from people who claim to be leading our direction of thought, but they never really have nothing of substance to say. So that has been bugging me, and it's almost like clockwork, because this time last year, Umar was beefing with Dr. Boyce Watkins. And here we are almost to the day, a year later, it's the same thing again, but now you got to add a third party to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's troubling to see, but I'm joining the 2018 pledge. I saw, I don't want to say his name wrong, Bernard posted this. He tagged somebody in a post I made, because I did a video the other day. Well, not a video. I talked about this last night, and then I put it out in the video form. I said that I don't want to hear nothing about Tariq Nasheed and Umar Johnson beefing. I did a program where I talked at length for some time and shared an article from a lieutenant general on what leadership looks like. Because we toss around this word leader, and I don't even want it applied to myself. You know what I'm saying? That's how it's being watered down and used so much. And then when you look at leadership qualities, you find that a lot of people that's being called leaders, let's just say they're not well-rounded. They may have one or two attributes, but that's pretty much it. So I don't want, what did they call it? The No Bullshit Campaign 2018. That we are not going to allow ourselves to get caught up in bullshit, okay? Because that's what it is when you're sitting there for an hour listening to one grown man call another grown man out his name, drop all kind of N-bombs on him, threaten people, threatening violence towards one another. And you're supposed to be representative of a conscious community. Again, I know people make up labels and use these labels, but my issue is with the audience. Why do we keep feeding into that? And then you got this camp over here and you got that camp over here and they're fighting each other. And when we say fight, we mean a war of words because, you know, I hope it don't never go into no actual physical confrontations and violence. But then all of this is unconstructive, and it distracts you from what you're supposed to be working on, you know. Now, for those that say white supremacy, that's the problem right there. We need to dismantle the system of white supremacy. I am not in disagreement with you. The only difference that I say is white supremacy is the tool by which they keeping us in slavery, okay? And slavery was never abolished. And I don't mean metaphorical slavery. I'm talking about legalized slavery. You want to talk about, you know, chattel slavery. Chattel means property. It means a head count in Latin. They counting heads in a private prison to the tune of billions a year. They booming right now. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I feel you, Max. It's very troubling. It's also, we should take this as an opportunity to do some self-reflection, not just the individuals who are putting out the, what would we call them, beef videos or something, like rap beefs or something, you know? They should be doing some examination, but those who fall right into that need to do some self-examination because, you know, I was seeing people saying, oh, he shouldn't call him that name, and we calling each other names and that. But I was like, wait a minute, hold up. When he was dogging out black Christians and saying that they the problem or this group of activists over here, you know, they don't know what they doing and they lost and they confused and all this and that, you know, you didn't have a problem with that. But then when people who are in that conscious, wearing that conscious label go at each other, now you don't want to see anybody called any names. You don't want to see black people attacking each other. But when it was, if it's the conscious community versus, let's say, the black Christian community, or let's say the black activist community, then you was buying all into that. And that's hypocrisy, man. That's hypocrisy. And I ain't down with hypocrisy. I'm down with self-reflection, trying to learn, trying to grow from my mistakes. And move forward in this movement. And the movement that I'm a part of is to end slavery in this country, Max. So those are my thoughts on that.
Yes, I listened, watched your videos and heard your thoughts on the subjects. And you went, as you said, into detail on these cats and what they're about.
No, Max, I didn't go into detail on them. I went into detail on what leadership looks like.
Well, I'm talking about going all the way back to when you were talking about your apologies for providing a platform, for instance, for Umar Johnson,
okay,
all the way up until today. So you've had some time to speak on these subjects and these people now for the past couple of weeks as we're going around. But, you know, it seems to be spreading as well. It's like we're going into 2018 with the people who are supposed to be these thought leaders instead of unifying, they are attacking each other or just throwing out a blanket of attacks. Like I've been hearing Yvette Carnell for the past couple of weeks try to define who is black and who is not, who should be part of our group and who shouldn't be part of our group. And particularly going in on Key and Peele, for instance, questioning their blackness because they're biracial, not because of anything they did, but because of the circumstances of their birth. And things like that is really bothering me. I don't want to see us going into 2018 where these are the type of mindsets that we're putting up on a pedestal for people to be listening to. Where I'm with you, Scotty, I want to hear people talk about modern day slavery and human trafficking. I want to hear people go to the root causes of issues and deal with that. I don't want to be sitting around watching no damn circus where people just flinging out names and generalized terms and disassociating people or trying to steal people's blackness or steal their position in the movement or whatever it may do. It may be, but that has been bugging me now since it started with Coates and West a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, I don't let it bother you too much, Max. You know, it is what it is. It won't be the last time, and we got to stay focused on ending slavery. We got to stay focused on our mission, and we just can't allow any distractions. And I guess that's what the people mean when they say 2018, no bullshit. You know, we're not going to get caught up in that. Now, I do want to say this, and I do got a couple of other calls. I want to acknowledge those calls and get to them before we wrap up, Max. But I will say this. Now, I watched Breaking Brown last night, and on the issue of immigration, and you may be talking about something else, but on the issue of immigration, look, I agree with her in that all skin folk ain't kin folk, okay? And in that you do have immigrants coming over here from Africa who ain't identifying with the black struggle. They're coming over here from a wealthy class within their own societies and where they have poverty, like Nigeria. Everybody in Nigeria ain't no oil baron. Everybody in Nigeria is, I don't even think they got any kings or queens or to call themselves royalty, which is ridiculous, but but you do have some very, very wealthy people. One of the wealthiest men in the world is from Nigeria. I can't think of his name right now. So you got these people that's coming over here. All right, let me put it this way. For example, one of the stories that I put out there today is Donald Trump signed an executive order that was going to put some restrictions on those H-1B visas that the tech industry is using to import cheap foreign labor, primarily from India. And I was thinking about this today, and I was like, well, what type of Indians are they bringing over here? Because Donald Trump was like, this is a lottery, and it's not supposed to be that way. Those visas are for jobs that require high skill, real high skill, and high pay, you know, real high pay. But they're giving the jobs for that people here in America could be trained for and then fill those positions. They're giving them to these Indians from India. Now, I was thinking about that today. I was like, you know what? India got a caste system. The Dalits is on the very bottom rung. They're known as the Untouchables, and they actually identified during the 70s. Now, I can't tell you about today, but during the 70s, because of the influence of the Black Panther Party, they even started their own formation called the Dalit Panthers, and they adopted the Black Panther Party's 10-point plan. Now, those people are only given opportunity within their own country to do jobs such as cleaning out the sewers, sweeping the streets, you know, the work that they say that nobody wants to do, you know, the nasty, grimy type of work. They reserve that work for the quote-unquote untouchables. But the ones who are at the top of society, see, they get to go to college and learn these tech skills, and they get that training, and they get to file for those HB1 visas. Ain't no untouchables being brought over here. Ain't no Dalits being brought over here as no tech guys or tech women and providing, you know, tech services for Silicon Valley. No, that is an upper class of Indians who practice proxy racism. I mean, it's sad, man, that you live in a country, y'all the same nationality. There's a difference in some skin color, but you pretty much all look the doggone same to me, except for the ones that's been light brighten their skin with them skin lightening creams and whatnot. But they practicing a form of oppression. I mean, not a form of oppression. It is oppression. They're mistreating, to go back to that Neely Fuller clip, they're mistreating their own countrymen. Okay? They're mistreating them. You don't think that those type of Indians that's mistreating people in their own country are being given these jobs and brought over here? Why? Why is it mostly these Indians? Because they can be more easily integrated into white supremacy on the job here than if you brought a Dalit over here who's being oppressed in his own country every day. He gonna identify with the black man and woman over in this country. Okay? And so, you know, I look at it like that. So I agree with her that immigration, if you come over here as an immigrant, you got to have your politics right. We just got through talking to Sister Sophia Williamson with the Momia campaign to bring Momia home. She's born in Jamaica. But she down with our struggle. She over here doing what native-born black folks right here in this country ain't even doing. And that's advocating for a political prisoner. And she's been doing it for the past 4 years. She calling herself new to it, but she is a veteran compared to people who've been here all their doggone lives when it comes to addressing issues with our political prisoners. So it's you have to judge individuals based off of their own, their personal politics and how they interact. Now, they coming on, I agree with her. If the point of affirmative action was to repair the descendants of victims of slavery, that's what Lyndon Baines Johnson said, that we gonna set aside this number of seats for the descendants of victims of slavery in this college university. To me, it ain't right to fill that slot with a Nigerian, with a Kenyan. And that was set up that's like a form of reparations for us, but I don't accept it as reparations, but that's what it was put in place for as how do you say that word? Repairing. You're trying to repair something or a person. You're trying to make this group whole. And of course we know they fall way, 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 way short, even with affirmative action, when now you're classifying white females as a minority group. And then they get, you know, those contracts that set aside for affirmative action. So not only do we got to compete with the white female, now you're telling me I got to compete for those slots with a Nigerian? I got to compete with that with a Kenyan? How come they just can't come over here and apply as a general person? Why they got to be given African-American slots? Well, like a Duke University professor said, they prefer continental Africans. Again, this isn't a slam against every person in Africa, because I have come across activists like we spoke with Sister Sophia tonight. I spoke to an Ethiopian activist who identifies as black, and she's out here fighting with us. But then we got some of them that are straight up proxy racist, man. They look down their noses at us. They call us cotton pickers, descendants of cotton pickers, and you know, they come from money. And like she said, we can't go to Africa and get what they getting over here. So I think she got a valid point in that regard. And I think she made it clear in the video that I saw last night that she isn't saying everyone who comes here is our enemy. But if you act like an enemy, then I'm going to treat you like an enemy. To me, that's common sense, because all skin folk ain't kin folk. Let me move on to the next call. I hope you was able to get that off you. Anything? Was there anything else, Max? Let me just ask that.
No, we'll move on, man. Go ahead and do your thing. I'm sitting here and listen.
All right. Thanks, Max. Thank you. All right. Let me go to, that's either Thomas or Ross. that's unmuted. I can't see the phone number, but you.
Thomas.
Yes, Thomas. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. I just wanted to say, man. I was listening to what you guys were just talking about. You know, Tariq and Umar, to me, is sad. Once we get to the name calling and the threats, it's when it goes a little too far, and it might, you know, be something that you can't come back from.
Right.
The facts each one laid out to me was enough, you know, for them to start calling each other names and booking a fight date. I thought that was counterproductive. You know, I would have just liked them to answer the facts. You know, was it that are you using all black or all white film crews or Tariq and Dr. Umar? What's going on with the money? Can you show us the money? I mean, if we're going to deal with the facts, then let's deal with the facts. But once you start the name calling and, you know, when I see you, I'm going to do this, you know, that's when it gets real niggerish.
Childish, man, and it's not good leadership quality.
Childish.
Because one of the things that I mentioned last night from the Army general is that one of the good habits to have for good leaders is transparency. And those what you just said was we need to know this, that, and the other about this question and that question. That's part of being transparent, and that's a good leadership quality. So that if they're not answering those questions, they're not being transparent, and they're not showing a characteristic of a good leader. I'll leave it at that. Go ahead, Thomas.
Just around the blogosphere, Yvette Carnell's show, I think it's very good. I would like for you to bring her on, Scotty, if you can interview her. She has some very good points. I don't agree with the politics to solve everything. But a lot of her points, and that point she made about the Africans in the last video and the video before, was excellent. I thought, like you just laid it out, it was very good. And unlike the previous caller, I think for sure even better than that conversation has been the conversation about the mulattoes that's been going around on the blogosphere, on the YouTube and stuff. That is definitely something else that needs to be addressed.
I had to check one out because, as I mentioned to somebody, I come from a family of mulattoes.
I think we all do, but I think that it's we come from a family of slaves too. We can't keep not talking about things that's and I'm talking directly people who have a white parent. That's how it's been addressed. Not so much of what's in your family tree. We all have that in our family tree, but just the person with a white parent. And the last point I wanted to make was on L.A. Ramon. He brought up some great points. And I think that it's a guy on YouTube. I would like for him to check out his page because he talks directly about the genes and what exactly happened. And to me, his theory, as far as I could go about checking it out, it's been pretty on point. His name is Brett Carr 2001. I think what he's proven to me is that we spend a lot of time thinking, we let white people tell us what other people look like. So if you think a Neanderthal looked like a caveman, then you're going to be, you know, mistaken. The Neanderthals are still here. They live in the Andaman Islands. They're called the Jawawa people. And they're still there. There's a lot of scientific journals all over the internet that's studying these people to figure out the DNA that all Asians come from. And white people being a mulatto Indian or Indo-Asian, an albinized Indo-Asian, that's pretty much where they come from, this stock. That's why these people are being kidnapped. And having their DNA spliced to this day. They're little black people. Some of them even have blue eyes, but that's not where the white people get their blue eyes from. But they're very small, very thin, but they're darker than most black people I see here in America. They don't have hair, although they have very little hair. But this is the DNA archetype of all Asians, be them East Asian or Indian. They come from these little people, and this is their fathers. Now, the question he comes about in his videos is who created these people? And I think he does a great job outlining that since the only people in the planet with everyone's DNA in them is the indigenous African or the Bantu, as he puts it, and these Chihuahua people have that DNA, but they have something else in them. This was a mixture, and he's saying that this wasn't something done naturally. This was something that was done by these original people to create another group of people. But I mute my line, Scotty. Thank you.
I have a question for you before I go to our last caller of the night. I got a couple of questions for you. What did you think about the clip of Mr. Fuller saying that skin color don't matter if you don't believe in practicing justice?
I don't follow Mr. Nelly Fuller's
Yeah, but just that statement.
I do follow. It does matter to me.
I'm not sure I understand the answer. Maybe
you said what?
The question is,
your question again.
My question is, if a person doesn't believe in practicing justice and not mistreating other people, does their skin color matter?
Yes, it does matter to me.
It matters to you even if they don't practice justice.
You're saying if a person is not practicing justice,
right,
does their skin color matter? You mean if a black person also is not practicing justice?
Does a slave catcher's skin color matter?
Oh no, when you being unjust, you should be penalized for that. You know, that has nothing to do with the system of injustice that a lot of people live behind. But yeah, if an individual person, doesn't matter who they are, is doing something they shouldn't be doing or doing something that's detrimental to other people, then they should be held accountable.
All right, thank you. Thanks, Thomas. You have a blessed rest of the year, man. Of course, I'm talking like I ain't going to be back on air again, man. But good to hear from you, man, anytime. Let me say this before we go to the last couple of callers. I don't spend a lot of time in my, let me say, maybe 20, 30 years ago, that type of stuff of finding out where white people came from or the origins of different people. That stuff might have interested me at a specific point of time in my life. It don't interest me now. I spend no time researching that type of stuff. You know why? Because I don't see any answers to the problem that in my opinion, is the foremost problem of the world, and that's ending slavery. I don't find any practical applications to ending slavery by finding out where a specific group of people came from. Especially when we look in Uganda and we see, and not just Uganda, but Ghana as well, which Max was supposed to be traveling there, and we hope to still get him there to talk about abolitionism on the continent of Africa. But when I see Ugandan prisoners being used to produce a half a billion in cotton every year, I'm like, what the hell do it matter where Adam came from, where Eve came from? I'm seeing slavery happening on that continent right now. And I don't see how that is going to help them to get out of slavery. So I try to stay focused on slavery and ending slavery by any means necessary, whether it's violent means like it took to get us a temporary reprieve during the Civil War, or if it's by more peaceful means, by legislatively. I'm a Malcolm X kind of guy, by any means necessary. So when people ask me these sort of questions, I don't even have an answer for you because I don't know. I'm not knowledgeable enough. I don't study those things. I'm studying laws. I'm trying to figure out, damn, how can we file a lawsuit against this bail bonds company under RICO so that we can shut that bail bonds company down? This takes a lot of studying. I just don't have time for a whole lot of outside interest. So that's not me saying that y'all wasting y'all time studying and having these conversations and stuff like that. I'm saying I don't have time to study, to even be part of a conversation like that because, you know, I just be running my mouth with no knowledge on nothing, and we don't never want to do that.
Can I say one more thing, Scotty?
Yes.
I just want to say, like, I totally agree with what you're saying. However, I don't look at the biggest problem on the planet as slavery. I look at the biggest problem on the planet as white people. So that's what I study. Okay. So I totally understand what you're saying. I can see why that's not important to you. But if you, I try to, my number one focus is ending white supremacy, not ending slavery.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Thomas. All right. Let me go to, now, I don't know this number, but you got like a passage from a book as your icon. You are unmuted. Would you go ahead?
All right. You hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Thank you for calling me.
This is Chris, man. CMCP.
Hey, what's up, Chris? Good to hear from you.
All right. Well, white supremacy and studying white people is slavery. What he just got off the phone and just said, how he said he don't study slavery, he study white people. That is, white supremacy is slavery. So it's basically the same thing. You just figuring out where they originated from, which makes sense because everybody got their aspects to study.
Right.
But we will never get rid of slavery or white supremacy as long as we have this currency, which is the dollar. And I'm not getting into no crypto and all of that, but I'm just saying this dollar is racism. Look who's on it. Look who's on it from the coins to the bills. So we're trying to fight a system, which we gonna win, but yet we're fighting a system with the same money that put us in it.
Let me interject. It's not just that it has white people on it, but its value is derived from the oppression of non-white people. There's no gold backing it. There's no silver backing it. What's backing it? The violence of the U.S. military to go over there and bomb the hell out your country if you try to change your oil, trade your oil in something other than the dollar. So
right.
That, yeah, but please continue.
We were initially backing it before, and then when these laws came in and they excluded us out of it, then they had to find another way to back it, which was slavery, going to jail, going to prison.
Right, right.
You know, they make a hundred and something thousand dollars off my brother every year for the last 22 years.
And
this is serious. You know, they basically like, look, we can't make money off of you guys like we used to, free. So now we're going to make it another way.
Right.
And that's what we did. And a lot of people don't understand what the 13th Amendment really means. The word amendment, which I'm sure you know, but for people who don't, amendment just means to add or change a situation.
Right.
It don't mean to erase it.
Amend. We're amending the law.
It amended it.
Right.
It just added to it and changed it, but it still meant the same thing.
Slavery and involuntary servitude. Yes, it did.
I definitely will continue to support, continue to help, and I hope your voice don't go away. And I hope folks is recording your stuff, because if y'all do go away, boy, it's going to be we're going to be feeding a lot of energy that we don't need. You know, and, you know, the other brother that spoke about, you know, those two out there arguing, they all about their pockets, and now it's coming down to an end. When you start trying to tell a person he you don't look a certain way because of this and all that's our division. It's too much. We all are different, and like you say, that woman said about just because you the same skin tone, that don't mean nothing. I get that. It's the same way here in America. Same way.
Agreed. All right. Well, thank you. Were you done? Did you have something else? I got a couple.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm done, brother. I'll definitely be chatting in with y'all on the next time. But I appreciate y'all, and peace and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Thank you. Peace and blessings to you and your family. Let me go to Otis. abolitionist comrade. What's up with you?
How you doing, Scotty? Hello to everybody out there. Max, Tribal Reign's birthday. All I can say to you is getting back to dealing with people. I don't think I know a human being on this earth who picked and choose how they came here, what they look like, what the skin color is. So personally, I tend to stay out of those kind of debates. I'm more concerned with where your mind is. I'm like you. If your mind is on abolition, getting to the root problem that causes most of the problems here and abroad, I'm all for you. And I'm sure that you know in your dealings, I've met white people that are far more knowledgeable of what the problem is with the 13th Amendment than some of the black people that I'm born and raised with in my 64 years here on this earth. And the point I want to make is, if you start trying to demonize people based on what country they came from, you're missing it, because the richest man in Africa is a Nigerian that's worth $21.6 billion.
Yeah, his first name is Tony.
And here's the point I want to make. In the last year, 35 more million more Nigerian children have gone into poverty. But this man has $21.6 billion.
Right.
So I'm looking, like you, for allies in mind and spirit that are focused on abolition. I don't have time to demonize somebody because they're a high yellow, brown, blue vein. None of that makes sense to me. It's another form of distraction. I don't care if you're fully melanated and your mind is on making billions and leaving everybody else in poverty. So that's where I am.
Understood, Otis. And Otis, you former military. I would love to hear your thoughts on last night's program in terms of that article I read by Lieutenant General's name, but just the whole thing of developing a habit, leadership habits. What were your thoughts on that in this current situation that Max laid out and others talked about, what we're seeing play out between these individuals on social media? What are your thoughts on the leadership aspect of, did you agree with what the general laid out or what?
I agree with you wholeheartedly, Scotty. I don't usually talk about a lot of my personal life, but I'm 64 years old. I spent my time in the military as one of the first black people to do my job sitting underground with a nuclear weapon on a combat crew. That is where I learned exactly what you're talking about, leadership ability. I had to put up with white folks calling me nigger, sitting underground when there wasn't but four of us, and you're locked into a place with four human beings. You're there to do a job, and they want to put their personal values on you. I dealt with all of that. And learning to be a leader and to lead by example is the only thing that really got me through it. And when I left that military situation, I walked out into everyday life in Tucson as either a big brother trying to give back to the community I was in, or as a member of what we call the Brotherhood Associated Military Airmen, because I understood that black people needed to start working together. And all of those same things about colorism and stuff are still dividing us today, because people want to get focused on distractions like Tariq Nasheed and Dr. Umar. If a person is gaining wealth and has no track record of giving back to the community that spawned him, that should tell you everything about whether or not you should be investing your time in it. Those people are distractions. They are no different than the Cosby Show or Fat Albert to me. They have no constructive use other than to keep you distracted from what you should be focused on in this life.
No, you didn't take it back to Fat Albert. Lord, he said Fat Albert.
As much as Bill Cosby didn't give it to his people that inspired him, he didn't do anything to help them. And he readily admits that all of it came from his life experience.
All right. Well, thank you, Otis, for sharing that. You know, I just wanted your thoughts on the leadership aspect. But you have a good night, bro. Be safe behind these enemy lines.
Right on, bro. I'm with you. Long as God leaves me here, I'm on your side with this.
All right, we got one more caller, and I appreciate all the calls. Didn't have to play that much music tonight. I like my music, though. I'm keeping real with y'all, but, you know, callers calling in, we definitely want to hear from them so we can have some dialogue. Area code 502, thank you for hanging on so patiently. The floor is yours if you don't mind sharing your name with us, and go ahead with your question or comment.
Sorry, can I be heard?
Yes, you can.
Yes, sir. Greetings. This is Mohandas here again. I would just say, just chiming in on the whole conversation about white supremacy. I see the problem as white people, period. Just white people is the problem. Now, we have other problems, but the main problem in the world is white people. They control everything. They have poisoned the air. They have poisoned the water. They have taken all of our minerals out of the ground. They have killed us by the millions upon millions, even into the billions. And so white people are the problem. They have changed all the religions. They have changed Christianity, Islam, Hinduism, Buddhism, and what is that other? That Hebrewism? All of it, they've changed it. And you can look at it. Now, I can point out exactly. Not exactly what they changed, but I can point out the white supremacy in it. They put white supremacy in all the religions. That's why we should leave the religions alone. And they've, like I said, they have poisoned our entire environment. They are killing us. Every person in the world is dying before their time. That means they're murdering every single living creature, actually, is dying before its time. And it's because of white people. They've come to this country. They have not left. We are the native population here. Yes, some of us have come from Africa, and we've mixed in our blood. So we're African and we're Native American. And then the white people came here, and they have not left. They haven't left because they don't plan to leave. They plan to stay here and kill us. They plan to stay in Africa and kill us. They plan to stay in Australia and all the other places, even in Europe. They plan to stay on this world to kill us. My concern is white people. And, you know, but I want all speakers, all black speakers, to continue to speak to solve this problem, because it's affecting us. It's affecting me. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for sharing. But I, again, cannot point to people based on the skin color and say they the problem, when I see, especially studying from history, that they haven't done a doggone thing without the help of non-white people. Now, if I can see no non-white people lending a hand, no Barack Obamas, no Colin Powells, no David Clark Jr.'s, no Nigerian government voting to allow European nations to come in there and destroy the most prosperous nation in Africa, that would be Libya, and then start practicing slavery, and then you're sitting on the sidelines while your own citizens being enslaved by a bunch of Arabs in that country, when there are no non-white people assisting, then I could with confidence say that the problem is white people. Again, I'm not on here to try to get anybody to agree with me. I'm not on here to agree with anybody else. I'm on here to have a dialogue, and we all contribute and let people take away from the conversation what they take away from it, think about it more, and what have you. But I just come to the conclusion that we got evil ass people in this world, and it don't, like, for example, and my study of Africa, I don't study Africa to learn about kings and queens. I study Africa for slavery. How did slavery get a foothold on that continent? How does it relate to the modern system of slavery we're dealing with here in the United States? Why are Ghanaians asking abolitionists here in the United States to come to Ghana to talk to them about abolitionism? So I came to the conclusion from studying slavery on that continent, and I don't get into debates about, oh, this was a more kinder gentler form of slavery. Slavery is slavery to me. You're stealing somebody's energy. You're holding them captive against their free will. I don't care if you make them pancakes in the freaking morning before you send them out there in the field. It's slavery. Okay, so I don't even allow myself to get distracted with whose slavery is more brutal than the other. That's nonsense to me. Slavery is slavery. When you take another person against their will and steal their energy to produce profit for yourself, again, I don't care if the person didn't feed the victims before they sent them out there in the field, or they gave them a very good breakfast before they, it's still slavery to me. But I, from my study, and I go, it's not what I think, but my interpretation of history from the things that I've read, all right, there's a lot of stuff I haven't read that obviously should be considered once I read it. But from what I read, Europeans only were able to colonize Africa because of the beast between Africans. See, a lot of us outside the continent, not all of us, but a lot of us, we think Africans are just one people when they have over 177 different ethnic groups with 177 different languages or tongues or dialects, probably more than 177. I just threw that out there. They were fighting each other before the Europeans stepped foot on that continent. They were fighting each other for land and resources before the Arab got a foothold. How did the Arab and the European get a foothold in there? He told this group of Africans that, you know what? I see you waging war against those Africans over there. We can help you win that war and take over their land. And all you got to do is sell us those that you captured. The white man did not just run up in Africa with guns blazing and just took over the continent. He is a master of deception, of deceit, and manipulation. And he just exploited what was all the deep rifts that were already there. Do y'all not, have y'all not heard, I say this rhetorically, have y'all not studied Shaka Zulu? Did you not see how brutal that man waged war on other tribes to expand the empire, the Zulu empire? Okay, people were waging war on Africa, I suspect, since the dawn of time. And I mentioned this the other day too, here in this continent they call North America. I talked about my Cherokee ancestor that I had, just one Cherokee ancestor. Cherokees practiced slavery, just like the other so-called five civilized tribes. And they assisted the European in attacking, not just keeping us in chains, but also in attacking other tribes. You go way out there to the west, you got the Comanches. The Comanches was practicing a form of slavery before they ever came into contact with the Europeans. But what they would do would eventually, and this is similar to what I heard people talk about Africa, was, it's different. Because once you went through slavery and were adopted into the Comanche tribe, and they had a brutal ritual you had to go through. If you survived, you were a full-fledged Comanche then. You were no servant and just got treated nice and all of that. You became a Comanche. And it's the same thing in Africa, you know. So you got tribal warfare all over the globe. And then let's just bring it back to why people don't want to see Umar, Tariq, and the other people that were named at war with each other. Because that's how the enemy comes in and exploits those rifts. I've seen it play out all through history. So that's why I can't say that another man is the problem, when there's a problem in me that allows him to come in here and manipulate me. I mean, I ain't on my game that I ain't right in what I'm doing. So, you know, that I'm just speaking on history. That's my interpretation of history. That's why I can't say one individual is the problem, because I see they getting too much help. One last call, and I'll wrap it up. Otis, did you want to chime in one last time? I do got to wrap it up, fellas. Otis, go ahead. I can't hear you. All right. I guess Otis did not have anything else to say. I'm just saying. And then I'm going to say this, because it's all straight talk in 2018. Sometimes when people say things like that, nothing anybody said tonight, but I question things I read on social media. I like, how y'all looking at my grandson? You know? Because my first wife was not a black woman. She's a woman of color. If she perms her hair, you think she's black, but she's not. She's Hawaiian, Samoan, and Chinese. But you ask our children who they are, they're going to tell you I'm black. Well, one of my daughters married a black male who has a white parent. His mother, we didn't even know. My daughter didn't even know, because his mother abandoned him when he was a young child. He was raised by his father. And so he went to high school. He was dating my daughter. Never entered into my mind that this boy had a white parent. You know, because he didn't never let his hair grow out. He all, you know, just kept short hairstyles. Maybe if he'd let his hair grow out like Colin Kaepernick, because that's who he reminds me of, then I might would have got a clue. But because he kept it short, I'm like, hell, he the same damn shade as me. And I got two black parents. So when I hear that kind of talk, and then I look at my grandson being, we might well call him mulatto, then I, you know, I'm like, damn. That's, y'all talking about my grandson. Y'all talking about my, you know, well, that's the only grandson I got that's in it with a white, who has a white grandparent. And she has nothing to do with them whatsoever. And so, but my grandson growing up black, that's what he knows. That's what he's being taught. That's what he identifies with. So that's why I cannot get into drawing any kind of lines along phenotypes and skin colors and hair types. You know, again, I have my disagreements with the things that Mr. Fuller say, but I just happen to believe that I should be focused on justice. And I should treat everybody with respect the way that I want to be treated. And then if I do that and then somebody disrespect me, then I'm going to deal with that person. I don't give a damn what their phenotype is, what they look like. Like Mr. Fuller said, how tall they are. I'm going to deal with you because you violated me as a human being. So that's just how I feel. But again, I ain't on here to chastise nobody. I'm not on here to tell anybody that they're wrong or say that I'm right. I'm just saying that based off of my experiences, based off of what I've read, this is the code by which I live by. All right. So with that said, man, we do got to get it together, though. Like Malcolm X said, by any means necessary. If you think the answer is to end white supremacy, do that with all your might. And I support you 100%. If you're in the camp that white supremacy is a symptom of slavery and the real problem is slavery, then fight that. Because it's all interconnected. All of this oppression is interconnected. And as long as we bang it, as we all banging on this system, we'll bring it down. You know, this empire is going to crumble on its own due to mismanagement. But where are we going to position ourselves when the pieces fall, so to speak? And, you know, so I'm like, also don't think that there's 100% unity possible. Again, look at Africa and the tribal warfare that's going on there. You just had a Zulu king say, all y'all Africans that ain't from South Africa need to get the hell out. So I ain't trying to look for 100% unity. I'm looking for 100% commitment among comrades to do whatever it is that they said that they're going to do. If you're saying you're attacking white supremacy, attack that. Attack it. Beat that bitch down. All right? If you say you fighting slavery, goddamn it, fight them. Get them slavers. Take them out. And I mean that more metaphorically. I ain't telling nobody to go out here and kill no slave catchers or anything like that. But, hey, Malcolm X said by any means necessary, and I ain't here to tell nobody how to get their freedom. All right, so with that said, y'all be safe behind these enemy lines of USA Inc. where they still practicing slavery and racism and white supremacy and classism, and they mistreat women, they mistreat children, they mistreat the elderly. Hell, they mistreat every damn thing, man. It ain't nothing. They mistreat the land, the air, the water. Everything is being mistreated, y'all. We cannot sustain ourselves on this path that they have put us on. And so we got to do everything we can to do what we can do, the best that we can do, and then be training up our children and our grandchildren to continue to fight if we don't get it done in our lifetimes. But with that said, peace and blessings to all. Y'all be safe out there. I'm out, and we'll be back on air tomorrow night at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time with New Abolitionist Radio. Peace and blessings, everyone. This has been Scotty Reed of BTR News reporting. Support independent media today by giving a tax-deductible donation to the Black Talk Media Project, which has been providing public digital media since 2008.